Hi, my name is Eli Tuckman, and I thank you for joining me in our study of the Mishnah. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the big picture of what is the Mishnah, and what is its role in Torah Shebaal Peh. Very often, these terms, Torah Shebaal Peh and Mishnah, are kind of interchanged, and they're really not the same thing at all. When Hashem gave Moshe the Torah on Har Sinai, there were two components to the Torah. The Torah Shebichtav is, of course, the Torah that we know that's written down in the scroll. It's written, and therefore it's Shebichtav. The Torah Shebaal Peh is an oral Torah that goes along with it. And there are many components to this Torah, to this oral Torah. There are aspects of the Torah Shebaal Peh that are explanations of the Torah Shebichtav. There are aspects of the Torah Shebaal Peh that are elaborations on halacha that is usually recorded in the Torah Shebichtav, but in a few instances only in the Torah Shebaal Peh. And there are also within the Torah Shebaal Peh rules for further analysis of the Torah Shebichtav to learn out even further halachos in the future. So the Torah Shebaal Peh is a very, very comprehensive, really massive thing, which is very, very hard to kind of like get your hands fully around. And the most important part about understanding the Torah Shebaal Peh is that it's supposed to be Baal Peh. It's supposed to be orally transmitted. Just as the Torah Shebichtav is in writing, and when we're fulfilling the mitzvah of Torah Shebichtav, which is reading it, we must read it from the written word. We're not allowed to lane by heart. We must lane from the Torah. So too, when we're doing the mitzvah of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the transmission to the next generation, it must be done Baal Peh, only orally. For this reason, for generations after generation, from the time that Moshe received the Torah on Har Sinai, to Yehoshua, to Yehoshua's Talmidim, and each Rebbe to a Talmud from generation to generation, the process always was more or less as follows. The Rebbe, who had, after all, once been a student on himself, had a set of notes that he had written that he kept at home. Those notes never made it to the Beis Medrash. In the morning, the Rebbe would wake up and review his notes and kind of figure out what it is he was going to teach that day. Then he would go to the Beis Medrash with nothing in his hands, no books, no papers, no pen, nothing. The student meets the Rebbe at the Beis Medrash, or the students, and they also have nothing in their hands. And the Rebbe teaches the student, and it is entirely oral. Nothing is written, nothing is read. It is only voice to ear. Right, the Rebbe speaking, the students listening. Presumably there was also some exchange of conversation, questions, answers, but it's all oral and nothing is written down. At the end of the day, the student would go home, back to his place, and he would sit down in private and he would write himself personal notes. There's no problem with having these personal notes of Torah Shebaal Peh, because after all, they're not used for transmission, they're just used for memory. But the transmission must always be Baal Peh. Of course, after many years, when that student then became the Rebbe, he would have those personal notes of his that he would refer to when he was teaching his students. And so it went on for years and years and years. During the entire time of the first Beis HaMikdash standing, this process is unchanged. At the end of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, of the first Beis HaMikdash, things changed dramatically. First of all, it is really the end of Jewish self-governance. While it is true that the Jews more or less sort of kind of driven themselves for large chunks of time during the second Beis HaMikdash, they never really were truly free from outside influence. And they never really, really had like the kingdoms of Yehuda and Yisrael, the independent power that they had. For that reason, they also did not have the ability to really completely structure society in a Jewish way. At the same time, it's also the end of the period of Nevuah. And so as Nevuah comes to an end, and Jewish self-governance is somewhat limited, Torah Shebaal Peh takes on additional importance. Because with no more Nevuah, we really need to make sure that the transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh is accurate and complete. And without the Jewish self-governance and the ability to make sure that society is structured around the support of this kind of transmission of Torah to the next generation, it becomes a little bit more tenuous. And so we see the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, who are establishing the Second Commonwealth at the beginning of the Second Beis HaMikdash, really kind of formalizing certain aspects of how Torah Shebaal Peh is transmitted. And it's at this time that we start to see, for the first time, formulations, like sayings that are passed down from generation to generation, rather than just these ideas that are that each person is kind of teaching in his own way. We actually have quotes where people are quoting from the previous generation. We don't typically have quotes that are headed back beyond Anshei Gezel. Those kind of quotes really start there. And so, well, we don't really call those people Tanayim at that point, but in a certain real way, that is the beginning of the period of the people that we're going to call Tanayim. And really the precursors of what's going to be later the Mishnah. The word Mishnah comes from the Hebrew word Shana, right? V'shinantam levanecha, we have in Shema, to teach. And so Mishnah is the thing that is taught, that which is taught. To teach is Shana. And when you translate that into Aramaic, Aramaic and Hebrew are very similar languages. They're both Semitic languages, and they have a lot of things in common. And in many cases, the Hebrew word and the Aramaic word are similar or identical, sometimes with just a single letter switch. And so the Hebrew letter shin is often interchanged for the Aramaic letter taf, and therefore shana becomes tana. And that's why the person who teaches that which is written in the Mishnah is a tana, a teacher. So we have this transmission still going on. There's a little bit more formalization in the stuff that's being passed on, but it's still going on from teacher to student, to teacher to student, to teacher to student, generation after generation, with nothing being written down. However, after the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, things get really, really bad. Now we're talking about the Jews are in exile. They're in exile now for a period that's significantly longer than the 70 years that was between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second, and it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. And the Jews are somewhat downtrodden. It's very difficult to maintain this ongoing transmission in a very focused way to make sure that nothing gets lost. And so the leader of the Jewish community, the greatest rabbi, or the leader of the rabbis at the time, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Nasi, the prince, the leader of the rabbis at the time, decides. He reaches the conclusion with his Beis Medrash, with his Sanhedrin, with his Beis Din, there is a pasuk. Remember those rules. There's a pasuk that says, "Esla asosla Hashem efira Torah secha." The time has come to do for God, violate the Torah. Which is a weird thing to say. You know, when we're doing for God, we're keeping the Torah. We're not time to do things for God means keep the Torah, not violate the Torah. So what does the pasuk mean? And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi learned from this pasuk. He said, "You know what? When it comes to saving Torah, sometimes you gotta. There are instances when you have to break a rule. Now, this is not something that you and I can decide, but when you're Yehuda Nasi and you're a Beis Din, you can really think that through and make a conclusion that this is what the Jewish people need. And so, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi determines that it is time to organize an official set of notes that will be public, and even can be written down, and this set of notes that he organizes is called the Mishnah. We're going to talk a little bit more about the details of what that means. But this, he organizes this official set of notes into the Mishnah. They are allowed to be written down, although they are frequently memorized and transmitted still Baal Peh. In fact, we often have, in the Gemara's discussions, we often have somebody who is called a Tana, but not the kind of Tana we've talked about till now. This is a person whose job it was to recite Mishnayos and Brisos. His job was to recite these memorized things so that everybody else could learn from them. So they are written down, but it seems like very often they were memorized and still taught Baal Peh. Now, the purpose of the Mishnah is to provide a common outline for teachers to teach from. So this way, we didn't have one Rebbe remembering to teach one thing and a different Rebbe remembering to teach another thing and not everybody remembering the same thing, and then you end up with multiple versions of Torah. So with a single Mishnah, everybody kind of has the same core notes out of which to teach. Because, after all, Torah Shebaal Peh is not really supposed to be written down, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi felt it was important to minimize the writing and to really have as short as possible versions of notes in the Mishnah. And therefore, the Mishnah is really very much an outline. It's not an elaboration. It's not written in essay form, and it's not in paragraph form, and it's not all of the details. It's very much in brief outline form. And therefore, we have three things that you wouldn't expect from the what is, at the time, the only non-Tanakh work, and the work of Halacha. So first of all, the Mishnah is not always the Halacha. The Halacha does not always follow the opinions in the Mishnah. So that's maybe a little bit of surprise, but when you think about its purpose is to teach, and if its purpose is to teach, sometimes the opinions that aren't Halacha give you a little bit more background of the big picture, and as you discuss them, you will add, and really, here's what the Halacha actually is. Number two is the Mishnayos are often written with implied content, so things are not completely spelled out. Sometimes there are words that are missing that are implied, and it's very kind of shorthand. This makes it sometimes difficult to understand, but after all, its purpose is not to be read. Its purpose is to be used as a teaching tool. And thirdly, the Mishnah is sometimes somewhat unclear. The truth is, in order to learn Mishnayos Shas, you actually already have to know Shas Mishnayos. You can't really learn it without already knowing it, because it assumes pre-existing knowledge. And that's fine if you have a Rebbe teaching it to you. It's not so fine if you want to kind of like pick up the book and figure it out on your own, because you don't have the prerequisite knowledge that you need. Now, the Mishnah covers all areas of Jewish life because it's intended to kind of be brief outline notes for all of Torah Shebaal Peh. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi divided his Mishnah into six major sections, six what we call Sedarim, six orders. Zraim, Moed, Nashim, Nezikim, Kodshim, and Taros. We will talk about each of those as we kind of get up to it. And each of those Sedarim is kind of divided into books, Masechtot. Now, the Mishnah is the official common notes that we've talked about. There are other similar kinds of things that come at around the same time. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi organized the Mishnah, but then there were also other Tanaim, all other people around the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who also organized kind of groups of these, what we're calling Mishnayot, these short, brief summaries of knowledge. They are often organized into something called Toseftot. Toseftot comes from the word Tosefet, which is additional. They're additional to the Mishnah. They're an additional set of these kinds of texts. And there's also Breitot. Breitot comes from the Aramaic word bara, which means outside, because they are excluded from the Mishnah. They're excluded from Tosefta. But nevertheless, they still have interesting information. And in fact, these Breitot and Toseftot are often quoted in the Gemara, because they often expand upon an idea that's found in the Mishnah, or otherwise contribute to a deeper understanding of the concept that the Mishnah has been talking about. So we could really go on about this for a much, much longer time, but this is a kind of a brief overview of what the Mishnah is all about. And so the next thing we need to talk about is the introduction to Seder Zarim and Maseches Brachos, which is the next thing that we will do in the next shiur.